This is Confessions of a Book Collector. I'm your host, David Headley, and I will be exploring all aspects of publishing and book collecting, interviewing best-selling and upcoming authors, and sharing insights on books both old and new. Welcome back to Confessions of a Book Collector. Today I am joined by my wonderful colleague, Emily Glenister, who is a literary agent at my agency. I thought it'd be really wonderful to invite Emily to come and talk to me because you've had my perspective as a book collector and literary agent, but I thought it might be nice to have someone who is new to the industry and has great passion and a different take on things from me. Welcome, Emily.
Hello.
This is live, Emily, so please do not swear.
Oh, nuts.
I'm joking. Emily hasn't got a filthy mouth at all.
She says nothing.
Thanks for coming to talk to me. You are new to being an agent. You've worked with me for 7 years?
8 years this year.
8 years this mm-hmm. year. And you've survived.
Just. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. But you wanted to become a literary agent, having been an actor's agent. Mm-hmm. And how different is it? And are you enjoying it?
Trick question. But no, I am very much enjoying it. The difference to being an actor's agent and being a book agent. The thing with book agenting and actor's agenting is it's far less about, it's about the product, the finished product with book agenting, right? If a book is brilliant, mind-blowing, incredible, there's a very good chance it will get published or at least get noticed by an agent and all the rest of it. If you are a mind-blowing, incredible, beautiful actor, there's no guarantee. There's just no guarantee because there are so many of them. And I know there are so many books, but really with actors, I mean, the difference for me is huge.
But did you discern... Because we've never spoken about this.
No, no.
So when you were an agent for actors, did you get scripts in and you think, oh, this would be really great for my client? Or did people approach you? Or did you just hear about projects? How did that work?
So there's a hub called Spotlight. And they, casting directors, put their briefs out on there. So for TV projects, theatre, film, whatever. They send it to agents and then you'll go through each character brief and work out who of your clients makes a good match and send it off. Sometimes you get approached by casting directors. If you're in one of the massive, ridiculously big agencies, then pretty much all the time. But if you have to hustle a little bit, then you're having to pick up the phone and chase casting directors. Please see my client, please see my client, which feels great when they say no. It's such a nice feeling.
Such a weird environment, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
So back to the book. So you obviously came to work with me as my assistant, and you're amazing, and you continue to be amazing. But you wanted to work with books, and you'd done a creative writing course, so you'd clearly understood a bit about the industry, and you wanted to be a writer. Do
yeah.
you still have that ambition?
Absolutely not.
Not.
No, I'm much more suited to making a phone call than waiting for it, first of all, which is, again, why I quit acting. And I like having that sense of control. Some would say control freak. I say perfectionist. And
I don't know anything about that. I am not a control freak.
It's definitely not why we get on well. But yeah, I did do a writing course and it was fascinating. And I met some really, truly brilliant people. Not least some of the tutors and the agents that I met there who, you know, came in to do talks, and we met a couple of incredible authors. So that was really fun. So I knew that I thought, oh, books makes me happier than acting or agenting for actors has ever done. So I should be doing something here. And then it was somebody from my group who put out an email to us all and saying, oh, I just met this wonderful man last night at a book launch called David Headley, and he's looking for an assistant. Does anyone want to apply? And before...
Thank you, Janet.
Thanks, Janet Ellis. And before anyone had even responded, I had sent off my email to you. And I remember putting a caveat that I'd make a great cup of tea.
Honestly, and I've said this before, you walked down the stairs into my office, and it was like Mary Poppins has arrived with your carpet bag and your umbrella. And you basically said, sack the rest of them. Don't even bother looking at anyone else because I'm here now. And you didn't say that, but you basically said that. And I was kind of like, wow. I was a bit like the father in Mary Poppins. Like, I was completely blown away by you. But then, obviously, we went out for a long lunch. it's not my thing. A long lunch, and we got on like a house on fire. Mm-hmm. And you've been with us since, and you've become an incredible literary agent.
Thank you.
I mean, you helped me so much with my clients, and you helped me discover some of my brilliant clients. But you have a brilliant taste, and you are doing incredibly well. I mean, you're doing incredible deals. What do you love about being an agent, and what do you find challenging about being an agent?
My favourite thing, without a doubt, is, you know, there are lots of wonderful things, but my favourite thing is being able to pick up a phone and tell an author that their dreams are about to come true. That is hands down the best feeling.
And what do you mean by that? Do you mean that you've got them a book deal?
I've got them a book deal, yes. So that they are going to be a published author. And that looks like a lot of things, whether that's seeing your book on a bookshelf, whether that just means your words are going to be read by at least one other person outside of your family. That it really does mean a lot of different things to lots of people. But that to me is the best feeling. I've been known to sob down the phone with my authors when they cry, and it's lovely. Too invested? No, not me. Emotional? Never.
But I think that's what makes you a great agent. You have to be invested. You're ambitious for your clients. You're ambitious for yourself, first and foremost, but you're ambitious for your clients. But you're really incredibly passionate.
And I think that if you don't, which actually, going back to the acting agent thing, I wasn't passionate. I cared in the way that a human cares about another human, but I didn't have that passion and drive to make someone's dreams come true in that vein, whereas it's what I live and breathe, and it's all I think about. It's what I think about when I go to bed. It's what I think about when I wake up. And it excites me still. You know, the world of publishing and books excites me 8 years later, and the world of agenting excites me 4 years later. So that's the best bit. And then the challenging thing, I think, is how rapidly publishing is changing. And I feel like it's hard to keep up, first of all, with where people are working. It's hard to keep up with trends. Not that it's something I particularly subscribe to, but publishers do, so it kind of has a knock-on effect to what we need to be looking for. I'm a firm believer in not writing for the market, because I just, you know, every market is saturated, in my opinion. But if you keep changing...
Every genre.
Yes, every single genre is totally saturated. And then if you keep churning out books in that same vein, then readers will get sick of it. They just do. That's tricky, because, you know, I'm not a clairvoyant. I don't know what's going to be popular in 6 months. All I look for is a really good story that makes me resent having to put it down when my husband calls me for dinner. That's all I really look for. So that's the tricky part, is how swiftly publishing is changing.
And so anyone listening to this podcast who is a unpublished writer, or in fact, if they're a published writer, but they're looking for an agent, what would you say to them? I know that you don't want to be prescriptive about what you're looking for, but what would you like to see land in your inbox?
I would like to see something that has not just had one draft. And I know that sounds obvious, but it's interesting how many writers do just like whack out a first draft and send it off without putting it in a drawer or holding on to it and coming back to it, because there's often glaring plot holes or, you know, things that
it's not ready, and you
can't get over that on a first reading. Even if you think there's potential, it's very hard to get past it when you have another 700 emails sitting in your inbox. I would really like to see something that has had time and care over it, which, again, it sounds daft, but it doesn't happen that often. And also, in terms of types of stories I'm looking for, I'm not terribly prescriptive. There are certain things I'm not looking for because I don't enjoy reading them, therefore I'm not the best advocate for them. But in terms of what I love looking for, I love book club, I love crime thriller, but it has to have an edge to it because there's so much of it now. But I want it to have something that makes me sit up and think about the world around us, or characters that I can't forget, I can't get out of my head.
So you don't want a police procedural?
Not at the moment.
And you don't want a psychological suspense?
No, I've got some of those, and the ones I have are brilliant. I don't need to fill my list with any more in that genre at this time, because my list is kicking butt in that department. So yeah, not at the moment. I would really love something historical, modern historical, you know, contemporary 21st century, early 21st century, not Victorian, maybe the 30s or 40s, a bit like Hokey Pokey, which came out recently. and I can't say her last name, so I'm going to mess it up, but it's Kate. And it's this glamorous murder mystery thriller set in the 1920s in a hotel in Birmingham. And it's, you know, the cover is stunning and it's sumptuous. And that's the kind of stuff I'm gearing towards more book clubby at the moment. But again, I'm not prescriptive and I love a good horror story, but at the moment, I'm just finding the horror stories I get sent are a little too speculative for me.
Right. Though I would say that speculative is going to come very big.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Speculative is fine on its own, but we already have an amazing SFF agent and I wouldn't want to step on his toes. And it's not something I read too much of, like when it's hardcore. So I just wouldn't be the best person. But something that sends a chill up my spine, that's less in your face, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. Less in your face and more just creeping and foreboding. That's the kind of horror story I love.
And going back then, because obviously you became an actor and you were a child actor until you were a young lady, but then you gave all that up. But did you read a lot? I mean, were books always part of your life growing up?
Yeah, yeah. My mum and dad always read to me, and my grandma specifically always read me books. I would get a bedtime story every night, and it helps when your parents are actors because, you know, they do the voices and they act them out, and it's, you know, you basically get a play every night, short play.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
You're spoiled.
I know, very, very, still am. they didn't dress up in costume or anything, but they definitely put on like little plays for me every night to send me to sleep, doing the voices and everything. And, you know, that instilled in me a love of books. And my husband only a few years ago built me a library because I had too many books.
You can never have too many books. Let's scrub that from this.
Yeah, Harry's words, not mine. Not mine. But yes.
But do you remember, did you have a favourite book as a child? Was there one that your mum or dad read to you that you loved, or your grandma?
Yeah, it's one that sticks out to me whenever somebody asks me that question, and it's The Selfish Giant.
The Selfish Giant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that book.
Do you not? It's kind of like a fable. And it's a metaphor for a bunch of different things. And it was a very small book, you know, one of those sort of long puffin, maybe it wasn't puffin, but one of those long picture books. And it's Oscar Wilde. And it's beautiful. And it's about a giant who has this palatial home with a big wall around and all these children want to come in and play, but he won't let them. And it's also terribly sad because, you know, there's a little bit of child death in it. It's really sad, but it's beautiful at the same time, the way it is. I love it so much. It's really special to me.
Thank you for that recommend, because I've never heard of it. No, and that's bad. I guess.
No, I'm not. I don't think so.
And so you moved on from that to what, when you started reading yourself, did you devour?
Jacqueline Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Also trauma. Massive, massive trauma books.
But weird, because then you went into acting those books.
The Tracy Beaker spin-off. Yes, yeah. I did. Yes. Best time of my life. And
if you could see Emily's face right now. Really?
Yeah, for legal reasons, that is a joke. But the Tracy Beaker spin-off I was in briefly. But I love Jacqueline Wilson books. I love them. I love the illustrations by Nick Sharratt, and my walls were lined with them. And then when I did the Tracy Beaker spin-off, The Dumping Ground, it was called, Nick Sharratt drew me, my character. And to be illustrated by the same guy who illustrated the books when I was a kid was huge. So I've got this like big picture of it in my study. It's not at all. What's the word? I can't say the word here. Can I? I have to be very good. A bit ego driven to have this big picture of me in my office, but it's me and my drawn by Nick Sharratt. It's very, very cool.
Really lovely. And, is the Dumping Ground still on TV?
I don't think so. It might be, but if it is, then I don't know.
Okay.
Mm-mm. No, it was, I feel like it was not on its way out, but I was in the last episode that the actress who played Tracy Beaker was in. The episode was called Goodbye Tracy Beaker. So I was meant to come in and be like the new care worker in the children's home. And, she's such a beloved character, so that when she left, everyone just hated me. So I was written out quite quickly. Fair enough, because I watch it back and think, God, she's irritating. My character was irritating.
And when you were acting, because obviously there's a lot of downtime when you're acting, did you read a lot then?
Yeah, yeah, I went on set with a bag of books or magazines or anything, really. Sit in your makeup chair, sit in hair and makeup, and then in between takes, when they're turning the camera around or they're relighting it or whatever they're doing, it is long. It's very long. And I didn't have, you know, enough lines to sit there and have to cram lines. I've learnt my lines for the time I get to set. So my way to pass the time was books, and I had a bag of them, famously. Makeup artists would always ask me, what are you reading today?
But I like your social media because you regularly post, and you've always got a book with you. Because yesterday I saw you post, I think you were on your way back from a weekend away, and I saw you were reading a book. What have you read recently that you love?
Well, I'm reading at the moment Sorry You Feel That Way by Rebecca Waite. And that is my kind of book to a T. I'd love that kind of book. If you want to know exactly what I'm looking for, that kind of book, that millennial trauma bonded comedy. That's what I want. And I also read recently Cleopatra Frankenstein by Coco Melles, which I loved. Utterly stunning cover. I've always loved that cover, so it caught my eye very quickly. See, publishers, covers are important. And I didn't know what that book was about. Didn't have a clue. No, none, none whatsoever. But I didn't know what the book was about. I picked it up and I fell in love with those characters in that story. And I really got into recently this kind of, what did they call her? Horror with Heart author, American author called Rachel Harrison. And she wrote a book called The Return and then a couple of others. And they are typical horror lore. So werewolves, vampires, what have you. But now, so it's got our contemporary humour, that kind of thing. But it's still creepy. I love her. I adore her. She's my biggest escapist read at the moment, I think.
Wow. And because you've been reading for our Glass Bell Prize and things like that, what were your favourite books of last year then?
So last year, that was a tough year. That was really difficult. I remember us having quite some fairly lively conversations. And I'd say that I had like a top few favourites. Wahala by Nikki May is one of my all-time favourite books. Not just is the author superb, but her writing. Oh, God, it's so addictive. And Pandora by Susan Stokes Chapman is a huge favourite.
It was a particularly tough year last year. It was.
Yes, it was. And I know, and every year is just going to get tougher, I feel, because I do think the quality of the books that we are reading and choosing at Goldsborough is only going to go up, which is no bad thing, but my God, well, it's hard.
It's hard because we've chosen not to exclude anyone. So whatever genre you're writing in, you can be included in this prize. And I think that's right.
Absolutely. And
but
you know,
it makes it difficult for us. Because how do you judge a science fiction fantasy?
There's no criteria.
Just, it's just about great storytelling.
And that also makes it subjective. So we're all sitting around the room saying, well, I liked for this reason. And it's like, well, I liked for this reason. And they're both right. I didn't love it as much for this reason. They're also right. It's very, very tricky. But the eventual winner, Ayanna Lloyd Banwo, When We Were Birds, was sublime.
But everyone loved it.
Oh, that was unanimous.
And it's easier then to make a decision because there was no real negativeness about that.
No, not at all. There was like a collective sigh when we came to that book. Everyone just went, oh, because they loved it. So yeah, it was a lovely year, but just very difficult.
And we should go into the confessional, because this is Confessions of a Book Collector, and now you have to confess about all of your penguin cloth bands. No, so I do know that you collect the penguin cloth bands, but you are a book collector.
Yeah, I am.
What do you have in your collection that you really love?
Well, there is one very special book to me, and that is a first edition hardback of The Book Thief, Marcus Zusak, and he signed it for me. And I asked, you might balk at this as a book collector, but I asked him to personalise it for me because I'm never going to sell it ever. I'd never want to part with it. If I could be buried with that book, I will be. And there was a wonderful young lady who used to work at Penguin who worked closely with him. And she introduced me to him. I came back to Goldsborough and everyone knew that I was obsessed with him in this book, but no one really had told me that he was coming in to sign at Goldsborough. So I walked in and everyone was just maniacally grinning at me. And I went, all right, everyone, what's going on? And Sophie, this wonderful young lady, came up to me and said, there's someone I want you to meet. And she took my hand and she took me through and I freaked out because he is one of my favourite authors. And he was a delight and he signed the book. Oh, he's so charming and so humble and just a nice, nice man. Yeah. And he signed the book. And he drew a heart balloon between the illustration of the two characters, and it was for Emily. And oh my God, it is the most precious thing on my bookshelf. And it has a little space to itself. There's nothing either side of it. It's just to itself, and nothing is allowed to touch it.
I don't think it devalues books having your name in something if it's that special. Because I've got all, I won't say all, a lot of my books are dedicated to me.
The ones that really ask something,
yeah,
personal.
But if I meet an author and I've really enjoyed that book, I don't mind them saying it's for David.
Yeah.
Because I joked about Roald Dahl in the past. Like if somebody, again, I haven't heard any emails from anyone, so if you're listening, I'm looking to David from Roald Dahl. If anyone's got a signed first edition of anything, I would love one. I know it's cheating, but I don't mind. It's for my collection.
Absolutely.
I don't think it matters really. So that's your most precious book.
That's my prized possession in as far as books are concerned.
That's such
that is
a
my
wonderful novel.
Oh, that's I read it when I was about 14 or 15.
Oh, thanks. Yes. It's a book of the month at Goldsboro.
Yes, so I was giving their ages away. Three. And I thought, oh, this. And I already knew I liked books. You know, I had loads of books as a child, as I said. But that was the one that made me sit up and go, I'm going to start using my pocket money to buy books. You know, the Saturday job I have, that's going towards books rather than just asking for them for Christmas or nicking them off, nicking my mum's Philippa Gregory or her Jackie Collins, you know.
Nothing wrong with those, though.
No, not at all. They weren't mine to own. I was just stealing books from my mum's library. And I thought, I'm going to buy my own now and actually start building my own collection of books. And that was probably the catalyst for me doing that.
So the book thief started you off as a book collector?
I think so, yeah.
That's amazing.
And it was a paperback by the time I got around to it, but I always vowed I would own a first edition hardback of it. Never thought I'd have it personally dedicated, though, so that's kind of cool.
And which edition did you get? Did you get the little girl with the curve?
The original, you know, that the brown cover with the girl holding Death's hand.
Oh, so the adult edition. Yes. There was two editions.
Yes, no, the original.
We had the original adult edition rather than the YA edition, which I didn't get because they're both the same text, but they did two different covers.
Well, there we are.
Good marketing.
Say less.
So that was the original book of the month at Goldsboro with Death's held in the girl's hand.
Yeah.
So such a iconic cover.
And it's so evocative. You can't help but look at it if you don't know anything about it and go, what on earth is that about? There's a little girl and death.
Yeah.
What? And yes, it is devastating, but it's so well done. Oh, I love it. I could go on about that book for years. I love it.
And so that question that I always ask everyone, if you had to leave your house and you had to take one book with you, I guess it's that book.
It would be.
There's no ambiguity about that, is there?
No. I mean, obviously we'd all love to take all our books, but even if I'm conflicted halfway through my answer, that's the first thing that comes into my head. So it's got to be that one. Has to be.
And what other treasures do you have in your book collection?
Well, as you mentioned, I collect the Penguin Cloth Fern Classics because they're just so pretty. Mm. And I completed the Puffin hardback cloth-bound collection, which is up in my office. And the one that I could never find was Grimm's Fairy Tales. And it's really expensive. All the others are about a tenner. But this one was going for over £100 on eBay, and I don't know why. They must have done a really small print run of it. And it was Boxing Day, I think, a few years ago. And I'd asked for it very cheekily. And no one had spent over £100 on me. Absolutely disgraceful behaviour. So I thought, well, I'm going to do it myself. So I went onto eBay and I found a copy. You know, it's damaged. It's probably not worth what I paid for it. But now my collection is complete. And it's so adorable and lovely and cute. And I love it.
So you're a completist as well.
I have to. And they have to look the same.
Yeah.
You know, when a publisher reissues a backlist, if I've got old backlists that don't match the front list and they reissue it to match the front list, then I'll buy it in the new version because it has to look, because it looks so pretty on the shelf. It looks so gorgeous.
I recorded a podcast a couple of weeks ago to talk about book collecting, and that's what makes book collecting so fantastic, is that we all do different things. Like, I couldn't possibly replace my first editions with updated versions because I only collect first editions.
Absolutely.
Whereas you're not that bothered about the edition then.
It depends what the book is. Like, for instance, the Book Thief, that was such a special book to me. I really wanted, like, the cream of the crop when it came to that book.
How did you find one?
Your lovely business partner, Daniel.
Did Daniel get you one?
Daniel knew I loved it and said to me, Emily, I've just got this book in, but it's not going to sell for much more because it's damaged. And it's damaged quite badly. But I said, I'll love it. I don't care. It's my baby. I'll have it. I'll pay whatever you want. And I think I got a pretty good deal. And
what free is free?
The really good employee discount. But it was just, yeah, that was how, and it was really touching actually, because, you know, Daniel, as we both know, doesn't say too much, but he listens. He listens, and he'd listen to me say that, and that meant a hell of a lot to me that he remembered.
Daniel does listen. He doesn't miss anything.
No, not a thing.
When I go for meetings with Daniel, I sit there waiting for him to talk to me, and I know that there's stuff going to come out of his mouth that I'm thinking, oh, you don't miss a trick.
Yeah,
he doesn't miss.
I was banking on you not noticing that. Yeah, no chance.
What do you mean? I spent that amount of money on that. Sorry about that, Dan. But, you know. The thing about being a book collector, and I don't know if I've ever said this before, is I love books so much that if I see a book and it might be really expensive and it might not, it's not literally, if you're going to start a business, don't run it the way I run a business. But sometimes I'll buy a book even though I know it's not worth the money I buy it, but I want to own it.
Yeah.
But I can't buy it for me. So I buy it for Goldsborough and then I just marvel at it in the glass cabinets in Goldsborough and I look at it fondly and I know that no one's going to buy it for that price, but I don't care because I want to own it, and that's a really bad business. It's a really bad business model. But we do have first editions of some really beautiful books in Goldsborough, and if you haven't been and looked in our glass cabinets, there's some real amazing gems in there. Anyway, back to you, Em. Let's go back to you being an agent. Okay. And let's finish off the conversation about you being an agent, and what would you say to those writers out there that are not able on not getting anywhere with their writing career, they're not able to secure an agent, what would you say to them?
I would look for common denominators in feedback first. That's the first port of call. So if an agent is coming back and saying, the concept's great, but I just didn't fall in love with the characters or you know, whatever thing they say, you've got to look for the common denominators, because then that's something you can probably fix. If there doesn't seem to be a rhyme or reason, it's just not for me, chances are it just might not be time for that story. And you, hard as it is, I think you got to put it in a drawer and start writing a new book. Not least because it keeps the creative juices flowing and stops you wanting to throw yourself out the window.
But you hone your skills.
You hone your skills, and you know, it is horrible being on submission. You know, I go on submission for my clients, and that's horrible. So I can't even imagine what it must be like as a writer. And rejection is par for the course, but never gets easier. It's hideous. However well-meaning it might be, it's horrible. And I don't take any pleasure in rejecting an author, ever. Especially when I've had an author trust me enough to send me their work, something they've been hopefully working on for a long time or long enough to feel really proud of it. So there's no flippancy when I pass on a book. But if there doesn't seem to be a common denominator, it might just be that it's not the right time for the book. And you should probably not look to trends, but look at what's being published or acquired. Just look. So for instance, if you've written a really dark novel, we're talking something that's a bit dank and depressing, is the market looking for something uplifting? Are lots of books being acquired or published now uplifting? Because, you know, the world's on fire a little bit. So we kind of want escapist fiction and not something that's going to plunge us further into depression. So naturally, it all depends. Everyone has a different taste and it's completely subjective. But that would be my fairly tenuous advice.
I think it's brilliant advice, because I do get some responses back as an agent myself from people who I reject, and they say, well, you're missing out. And I may well be missing out. But ultimately, we don't reject anyone lightly.
No.
Because we all want to make money.
We all want to make money. We all want to see... We wouldn't have a job without books, exactly. You know? And also, you know, if you do get a pass on your book, the worst thing you can probably do is send a retort. Not least because I haven't enjoyed sending that email in the first place, but it doesn't make me question whether or not I've made the wrong decision. So please don't do that, because I get retorts quite often and sometimes they're a bit mean. And there is a person at the other end of that email. So it's why it's a two-way street, the respect thing. You know, I will always treat authors with the utmost respect, because they have earned it and deserve it. Writing a book is no mean feat.
At the end of the day, we want to see books on shelves.
Yes, absolutely.
Emily, thank you.
Pleasure.
It's so nice to see you. I haven't seen you for ages.
I know.
thanks for coming to speak to me on my podcast. And if you want to send Emily a submission, are you open?
I will be soon.
Okay. So keep an eye out on the DHH Literary Agency website if you want to submit a novel. I am open for submissions. So I look forward to hearing from you.
Cheers, David.
Subscribe now to be one of the first to hear our new series and follow Goldsborough Books on socials to keep up to date with our latest news and to discover who will be joining me on Confessions of a Book Collector.